This is Flight Training the Way I See It with Mike Schiffer. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of Flight Training the Way I See It with your host, Mike Shiflett. I talk about news and opinion, a lot of news, a lot of everything. So we've got a good show for you today, got some things going on, and there's something that's not in the newsletter we sent out that's very important that we go over. We'll go over that first, and then let me just go through the show with you. We're going to talk about the endorsement that's now required to take the FOI. Yes, that's now required as of September the 1st. We're going to talk about the difference between slips and skids. That seems to be an issue. SAFE and some other organizations are pressing hard on that because people are really not understanding that, especially on CFI tests. And the FAA is slowly addressing the DPE shortage, so we're going to talk about that. And we got some pro tips for you. Got that. And I also have introduce this mastery class we're doing called The Weekend. It's a two-day class, and it's been refined. It was 3 days. Now it's two, so we can do it on a Saturday, Sunday. We'll talk about that. So that's what we're going to do. So we're going to dive right on in and sit down and buckle your seatbelt. There's nothing controversial in this one, unfortunately. I like those. Those are my favorites. This is the August 2024 video podcast, Flight Training the Way I See It. So let's talk about the FAA and how they're addressing the DP shortage. So there's a magazine that FAA produces called Aviation Safety Briefing Magazine. It's every 2 months. And this is a good little magazine. It's got a lot of useful information into it. And there was an article in there about check rides. Now, most of the article focused on avoiding the need to be qualified or the airplane not being airworthy for the test, basically avoiding that situation. How do I come into a flight test and have a better chance of being eligible, being properly endorsed, and the airplane being airworthy so we can actually start this test? For those of you who don't know, about 25% of flight tests that go on don't happen because either the person's ineligible, the endorsement's wrong, can't find the CFI, IACRA's not being completed correctly, or there's an unairworthy airplane or suspected something to stop us from saying, well, for sure it's 100% airworthy. And that just shuts down that test. And also, of course, what happens, that person needs another test. So we burn the spot for today, and then we have to set another one. So with the shortage that's out there and addressing this is becoming more important. Now, I have solutions to all this, as you can imagine. But I floated the idea in the CFI study group yesterday, which was the 27th of August. This is the 28th of August. And there's an FAA safety inspector in there, and he lit onto that pretty good. His name is Joe. He's a really good guy. He's from the Portland FISDO. And we were talking about many things in our group of about 14, 15, 20 people, however many people in that group, for Tuesday meetings. By the way, you should join the CFI study group. It's a Facebook study group. There are lots of great questions, good people answering those questions there if you're a CFI in training or you're a CFI and just have a question. And there's good people like Joe from the Portland FISDO who's in there who can pick up and say what his office would do in a particular case. We talked about missing qualifications, endorsements, and all that. And so anyway, one of the things I proposed is that, you know, we have IACRA. And IACRA works because the regulation in terms of applying for a certificate, it says that you have to submit an application, and it says this, in a form acceptable to the administrator. So basically, that can be anything. That could be back of a napkin, if you wanted it to be. That could be IACRA. That could be paper. That could, whatever the acceptable is. So you got to have a lot of variation there. The thing where we don't have a lot of variation is when it's the regulation says you need a logbook endorsement or training record endorsement. It says a logbook or training record endorsement. Now, that doesn't say in a form acceptable to the administrator. So it's either got to be in a logbook, electronic or otherwise, or it's got to be in a training record. And then the problem with that is there's a lot of missing endorsements. There's a lot of endorsements that in a 6165 hotel, you kind of have to be intimate with that document to get it right. So I propose that we do the same thing that we do in IACRA. We build up one side of IACRA that is a logbook. We just call it a logbook. We say, this is a logbook. You enter one line or as little as one line or all lines into that IACRA, and then all the endorsements are there digitally, and they're already vetted and approved by FAA, and you have them all there. So you never have to, when you fill out IACRA, you have the endorsements done at the same time, and that now is your logbook. IACRA becomes another logbook for you. And that takes care of the problem with the verbiage in the FAR, which says a logbook endorsement. It doesn't say in a form acceptable administrator. So if we're able to get those endorsements on there, maybe if we got even more clever and said what kind of certificate or rating you're applying for, then IACRA could check to see that you have the right endorsements. That's possible. So I have flowcharts. I'm happy to give them all to FAA.gov and let them chew on that if we could fix that. Because we're doing it sort of half, right? We do half electronic and half is like some paper logbook of some kind or so, something. So, well, For Flight and others have addressed that a bit. So that's helping. But anyway, in that article, near the end of the article, there was a discussion about DP shortage and what the FAA is doing about it. FAA said in the article they heard loud and clear from the public about the problem. Well, you know, for they didn't say for how long. I mean, that'd be the thing I would say. Yeah, for how long? You know, that. And they're actively recruiting additional DP applicants. And this is what's happening. So there's a standardization course that you have to go to in Oklahoma City to be a pilot examiner. And you can either do it before you get selected or after you get selected, but you have to finish it. And that course is open to everybody. Anybody can join it if you pay the fee. It's not much. I think it's 5 days around that time. So anyway, this course is being inundated with people who aren't yet selected as DPs. They think it improves their chances or it does something, right? And so more than half of the attendees were not pre-appointed or yet or soon to be appointed DPs. So they didn't have enough space in the classroom to keep the machine running because they do the class, I think it's once a month. So what they did was they suspended attendance to anybody who isn't already selected as a DPE. And that should help get the class attendance double and get more people on the street and appointed. And so they're actively doing that. So that's that. And let's move on and see past that. The Flight School, FASANA, Flight School Association of North America, completed a recent DPE study for charges for check rides. And the fees have gone up really a lot, considerably. Now, FAA doesn't regulate pricing, as DPs don't work for the FAA, so there's nothing FAA can do about this. They're private contractors. But as with anything, you know, as availability gets harder, the prices rise, and in particular CFI check rides, because that's a special designation. So if you don't know how the DP designations go, I'll just tell you. So when you're first appointed, you get you can get them all. Well, you can cover this one, but basically they usually give you PE. It's pilot, private pilot examiner. So you can do private pilots. Then the next one after that, you get designated CIRE, Commercial Instrument Rating Examiner, right? And that would include multi-engine, single, all that stuff, all the way up to commercial. Then there's ATP, that's a separate designation, examiner. And then there's FIE, Flight Instructor Examiner. And that comes in a couple different flavors. One is you can do reinstatements, you could do renewals, and you can do additional CFI ratings, but not initials. An initial has its own designation within. It's for initial CFIs. It's FIA, but for initials. And that's the least amount of examiners we have in the field, except for those that are specialty ones like Warbirds or whatever, are with that designation. So I was one of those. And in our FISDA, we had 12 DPEs, and I was one of two, right? And sometimes they rotated you out of it. They said, okay, you don't get to do that for a year. Let someone, Jackie, do it. But I did that for a long time. But that designation is, you have to be also a CIRE examiner for at least a year before you can get the designation. So even the people coming on, unless people are going to do the flight instructor thing, it's going to be a while before that gets fixed. Okay. So now moving on from there, they also eliminated the verbiage which said you could only do one CFI practical test per day. So you can do more than that. So you might be able to do that in a discontinuance or a retest or something like that. That will help in a bit. Now, in our world, in our three locations, we have location of Palo Alto, California. That's the San Francisco Bay Area. You have Las Vegas at North Las Vegas Airport. And then we have a place in Miami at Signature Flight Sport at Opa-locka. And so the test fees range from $1,100 to about $1,600. And in Phoenix, I've heard there are more. There can be $2,400, $2,200, like quite a bit. We're fortunate to have good DPE availability because we go out of our way to be sure the students are prepared And the paperwork is not going to be an issue. And we also collect deposits so that the DP gets paid at least half the fee if the student isn't ready or ducks out last minute. And we collect that ahead of time. That's just something you got to agree to before you come to see us. That's why we get tests, right? So we get lots of people call us who don't train with us who want us to get tests for them. Like, who do you use? The job of the CFI that's training you should be arranging a test for you. If you're shopping around for DPs as an individual, I don't know. Do you have the right flight instructor? Is that flight instructor put up people for tests before? Do they have a good relationship with the DPs doing their tests? It doesn't sound like it. So, or maybe they do, and the person's just slammed. And it's like, well, all hands on deck to get a test. That could be. But anyway, I'd suggest you find another CFI. In particular, find a company like ours or someone else's that arranges all this for you. So as an individual, you should not need to look around for a DPE. So this helps also when the CFI has a good relationship or our company has a good relationship with DPEs. It helps with the eligibility. They know that they'll be able to get a hold of me right away or someone else in the school right away if there's a problem on the test, and which never has not happened for years for us, by the way. Also, confidence. The DPEs will say, I don't mind doing your eyes test because I know the oral is not going to be a problem, and it's not usually a problem, right? And usually the applicants are pretty well prepared, and you know, if something happens, what happens? But in general, it's not something I'm thinking going to happen. Whereas other places, other schools, you don't know. So you have the confidence thing there. And then you have, of course, overall results as you become more and more modifying your teaching to reflect what the evaluators are seeing. Then that helps with your pass rate. Our pass rate's 90% first time, not overall. People say, I have 100% pass rate. Yeah, well, how many attempts? That's what I say. All right, now the FAA also had the reauthorization bill that was signed into law. And there was a requirement in that the FAA open up an office to train, assign, and standardize DPs nationwide. Hallelujah is what I say. No more FISDOs saying they don't have the oversight, or one FISDO saying you can't accept this endorsement, you have to do this one. You can't accept the legal interpretation, that's for a specific individual, these FISDOs say. Some of them, not Joe, Portland FISDO, excellent, I might add. Las Vegas FISDO, excellent. You know, so this office is going to take care of all that. They're going to do all the oversight. They're going to do all of the appointing, all the firing, hiring, all the standardization. And I say it's about time. There are people in there in standardization who, if they go to get another job and they put standardization on the resume, I don't know what they're standardizing. I don't know what they do all day because there doesn't seem to be any standardization going on. So this is really going to help out, especially in the standardization department. I would love to be a contractor for them and fix all that. It could be done. It could be done pretty quickly. My idea is to do it like AQP or military does it, or not military, the AMPs do. So basically what I would do is have 400 different scenarios on a flight test. So 400 different ones. Those are all vetted by standardization. Yes, you're going to have to get off the couch and do some work at FAA land, but you vet all these and say, yes, these are correct. These are the ones we want to use. And then you keep having others being written at the same time so they don't get stale. But anyway, you have about, say, 200, 400. You can have whatever you want. And very generic. You know, do a cross-country 2, fill in the blank, wherever that is. And then these are the questions that you might ask. These are the maneuvers you might do. And that is not known to the DPE nor the student until the day of the test. The day of the test, you go to IACRA, whatever it is. And when the test, you start the test, out comes a sheet or a PDF with a bunch of, this is what you're going to do. This is the test. So there's no DPE influence into it whatsoever except for evaluating whether the person's complying with it. You don't know ahead of time, so you can't game it. That's what I would do. They do this in maintenance. You know, you go in and the scenario will be this person in the morning, so rebuild a piston. Next one is time a magneto for the next person. And no one knows ahead of time what that's going to be. I think that's the fairest way to do it. But anyway, that's that. All right, let's look at the next topic. Let's get off that. I said it was not going to be controversial, didn't I? But it's kind of controversial. It's okay when I think about when I tell them, you know, get off the couch and let's get to work. Okay, the difference between slips and skids are not being understood. So in an effort by SAFE, Society of Aviation and Flight Educators at safepilots.org, they're trying to bring this to the spotlight. Most pilots and instructors feel that it's dangerous when the airplane's uncoordinated. It sometimes is, but not most of the time. So, as a quick lesson, let's describe the differences between a slip and a skid. In a slip, the ailerons are applied opposite the rudder deflection. This is used to expose a large area of the fuselage to the relative wind to cause a higher descent angle because there's a lot of drag and subsequent altitude loss, right? So that's called a forward slip. A slip can also be used to control drift in a crosswind landing. That's called a side slip. Neither of these situations are dangerous at all. Not in the least. In each case, the airplane's banked, but rudder is applied opposite to the direction of the bank. So because of that, an airplane is always going to spin in the direction of applied rudder. So if you think about like a slip, say, to the right, say you have ailerons banked over to the right and you're countering that, turning with left pedal. Well, the airplane's wing below the horizon on the right-hand side, right? And you're pressing on the left pedal. So what happens is that stall occurs, the wing has to come up through the horizon, come level, and then go over the other way before it has spin entry. And so that's a bit of time. That's some time there. And you have time to correct that. That's not dangerous. But in a skid, the airplane's rudder is being applied in the same direction of the bank. So you have bank to the right. You'd be pushing on the right rudder. And the airplane's going to spin in a direction of which? The applied rudder. So as the rudder is being pushed in and you have the bank over and now you stall because you're in, say, the right turn again, the wing is already below the horizon on the same side the rudder is being deflected. So when you push in and you stall, when you stall the airplane in that condition, the airplane doesn't rise to the horizon and come the other way. It goes immediately into the stall and the spin incipient mode on the right side. So that's the dangerous part. It's that. So that's what I wanted to say. So there's a difference. There's a misunderstanding of the difference between slip and skid. And many CFIs out there are teaching avoidance of either, so the airplane won't spin. So in a skid, it's likely to spin. But in a slip, there's adequate time to avoid trouble. So check out the article posted on SAFE's website, safepilots.org, in the blog postings. You'll find it there. SAFE is really, in my opinion, that organization really trying to improve instructional techniques, effective teaching, and these lack of aeronautical knowledge areas. There's that. Okay, let's move on. I wanted to introduce you to a new thing we're doing. It's called a mastery class, and it's a mastery bootcamp, CFI mastery bootcamp. It's going to be Saturday, Sunday. And it's going to be in October and November and February. So we have it set. We're setting the dates now. You can go to our website, and or you can just send us an email. You can send it to info@cfibootcamp.com or mike@cfibootcamp.com. And it just say you're interested in knowing more about that. And as soon as we get the PDF ready for that, with the landing page almost ready on the website, we'll send it all to you. So we're going to be talking about using technology in the first day. So we're going to be using EFBs, we're going to be broadcasting the smart TVs, we're going to be using Apple-connected devices, you can use something like iPad, we're going to learn how to share data, AirDrop, we're going to learn how to use the iPad with Apple Pencil to be able to make virtual whiteboards, we're going to use Zoom, we're going to, as a presenter. So you're going to learn how to do remote ground sessions, all the equipment that you need, microphone, headsets, everything will be defined for you. If you need a tablet, everything's going to be defined on that day. And then you're going to be using that. Whatever you brought, you're going to be using. So that's good. And then we're going to, second day, we're going to be using ForeFlight a lot in terms of advanced features. So we're going to go through all the advanced features in Performance Plus. We're going to go through actually the basics of ForeFlight, how to use it to present, how to use it to import your own files or airplane flying handbook or whatever it might be, how to sync up a cloud drive like Dropbox or something like that to it, S2. And then we're going to give you practice so that you don't, both those days, there's going to be practice time. So if you struggle, someone will be able to help you. The idea is that when you finish, you'll be a fully functional you'll be fully functional with the technology you want to use, right? You'll be able to walk into a flight school, see a smart TV and say, I got this, and then start your day, right? And use these and only bring an iPad into work and an Apple Pencil. That's pretty much the only thing you need. Maybe your laptop you could, but you know, it would depend. But you'd have a very small bag of things. And then the last part of the day, second half of that second day, is going to be using a syllabus, how to use a syllabus, how to run a training program using that syllabus, how to put in pre-flight briefings. We're going to give you the pre-flight briefings. They're done for each maneuver already. So pre-flight briefing is not a full-on lesson plan. It's what you're going to do just prior to flight, so for each maneuver. So that's how we use a syllabus for that on the flight side. So we're going to do that. So that's going to be fun. So I'm looking forward to that. We have a camera technology that allows us to, if you're remote, we'll be able to still help you. And we'll give you, so make sure that you can use all these tools. Like sometimes using Zoom, I can't share my, if I share my desktop, you see my Zoom controls, but nothing below the Zoom controls when I click something. So yeah, you get another camera that looks on top of that, so you can follow along pretty quickly or pretty easily. So that's what's coming. Okay, last thing we're going to talk about are the pro tips. But before that, I did want to say we're going to talk about that FOI endorsement thing. So that's new. So PSI released a statement, and it said that starting September 1st, the FAA is requiring them to collect an endorsement for the FOI fundamentals instructing knowledge test, which wasn't required before. So now, in the CFI study group, some things come up last evening, which are interesting. So that has to be from an authorized instructor. Now, authorized means authorized under 61.195 hotel, which is qualifications for training first-time flight instructors. So you're going to need to find an instructor who meets those qualifications to give you the endorsement. So that's not everybody. And you can't do a home study course. So home study course is reserved for private, recreational, commercial, sport, but not for flight instructor. For flight instructor, there's no provision for a home study course. So this is going to have to be given to you by a CFI who holds the credential. And also, there's no home study course going to be able to do it. So you're going to have to find somebody. So if you have a written test, FOI, after September the 1st, which is coming quickly, you're going to have an endorsement. So either take it now or go find someone who can give you that endorsement, okay? We would have that by default in our CFI training school. For CFI bootcamp, we would do that. It also has the potential to slow things down. If you don't have your writtens done before you come to us, we have to take about a day to get them And assuming you've studied and you're prepared and you just didn't take the tests, right? But you may not be able to take the FOI test before you come see us because you may not be able to find anybody who can do the job. Now, fortunately, we can do this electronically. We can do it via Zoom. We don't have to be in person. So we can manage that if we need to. But there's a possibility if we don't think about it, think clearly enough about it, that could be a bottleneck. Okay? So I just want to let you know that. All right, now the pro tips. These are generic in nature, but they're okay. So here's three of them. So this is about ForeFlight. So import documents you use to teach into ForeFlight under documents. Now, this is the part that's not super clear. You have to do this from ForeFlight's website, the web version. You cannot import a cloud drive directly, or sync a cloud drive or something directly from iPad or iPhone. When you're logged into your ForeFlight account on the web, click on Documents, and you'll see an import button. And also you will see connect the cloud drive or something like that. That will be there as well. So if you have Dropbox, something you can connect to that. Now, this is only mid-level subscription and higher. For the basic, you don't get this. You can import, but you can't connect a cloud drive. After importing from there, you have the documents, all your connected devices that use ForeFlight. ForeFlight will synchronize all your connected devices, and you'll have all that document or documents or folder on all the devices that you use, including your laptop. Okay. Number two tip of the day, when flying cross-country at night, plan your fuel stops at an airport with a 24-hour FBO and a fuel truck. Self-serve pumps can become inoperative or run out of fuel, and getting stuck until morning is not fun. That's happened to me before. So if you really have to fly at night, and especially if it's an area where there's a big airport or big-ish airport, and there's not much around it, and for a long way, like El Paso comes to mind, I would plan to land at El Paso and go to the FBO and fuel there. That way I know I'm getting fuel if I have to continue on. Now, if you're staying overnight, then that's a little different story. But if you're carrying on, try to stop at a place that has 24-hour FBO. All right, the third thing is to use Apple Pencil. If you're not using Apple Pencil on your iPad, you should be. When you're going to be annotating, what we're going to teach you in the CFI class and also our CFI Mastery Bootcamp, it's going to allow you to do some pretty good work. Like as if you were in front of a whiteboard. If you just use your finger, it's a lot more difficult, especially if you're trying to draw something, like a sketch something, or you want to make writing that's clear. You do that with Apple Pencil a lot better. Okay, so that's so go get yourself that. And here's the tip, fourth tip. If you're looking for products like Apple Pencil, you're looking for an iPad, and you're looking for a MacBook Pro or a MacBook Air or an iPad. Or anything, and like that, and you don't want to pay full price. Ooh, that got you right there, didn't it? Ooh, that got it. But you don't care if it's a few years old. then go to backmarket.com, BACKMARKET.com. What they do is they buy older Macs, maybe a year, sometimes 6 months old, sometimes 2 years, sometimes 5 years, depends, and they refurbish them, and then they sell them, and they give you a warranty. So I think this is a great thing, because like my Mac Mini is about 3 years old. I don't really need a new one, but if I did, I don't need the latest and greatest one. I don't do much with it except for teach with it and run ForeFlight with it. So I can probably get that iPad Mini for $300 or $400, maybe $200, depends. And it'll tell you based upon the age. And so go to backmarket.com and you can pick up some Apple products that will serve you well. Okay, that's all I got to say to you. I'll be teaching the class in Palo Alto next week from September 2nd until the 8th, and double I class right after that. And that'll be it till next month. And thanks for listening to Flight Training the Way I See It. This has been a production of Flight Training the Way I See It. News, tips, and opinion.